Welcome to the Christian History Shorts. This is the Gospels. The Christian story centers around a handful of first century documents called Good News and Good Announcement, though rendered in modern English as Gospel. A lot of ancient documents from the first few centuries have been given this title. But here, we are specifically interested in the four canonical texts, known by their alleged authors, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. The name canonical simply refers to their inclusion in the Christian canon, what one might call the Bible or New Testament, underlining their centrality and significance to the early Christian community. Together, they purport to tell the good news, the story which launched the Nazarene movement centered around a Galilean peasant named Yeshua. While echoing the modern genre of biography, they lack many of the same concerns. A biography of Churchill, selected from the bookshop, promises to give as many intimate details as possible, from his birth to his death, with the goal of shedding a new, more complete perspective on an otherwise one-dimensional political figure. The author must still pick and choose, acting as a seasoned editor in interpreting and aligning the facts to tell the story they want to tell. One biography will present Churchill, the lifelong seasoned villain. The other, the greatest war hero Britain, and perhaps the world, has ever known. The Gospel makes no such promise of completeness. Instead, it is weaved with fewer threads, as the Gospel's focus is less on Yeshua, on who Yeshua was, but rather interested in what he taught and what he did. The Gospel's audience is also far more narrow. The local bookshop hopes to pass out its biography of Churchill to any passerby who enters its walls. But the Gospel is meant for a Nazarene, or later, a Christian, and probably one of a particular locale. It is doubtful that the author intended much more than recording the details for their community, perhaps making a copy for other Christians in the region. In fact, there were likely many such first-century Gospels written, and even more told by word of mouth, and yet most never ventured far from their intended audience. Four, however, garnered widespread approval and acclaim, being recognized across the ancient world, Rome and Persia in particular, as telling the good news in a compelling and satisfactory way. They were all composed prior to the close of the first century, though determining a precise date is difficult. Their writers are probably lost to history, as the works themselves appear anonymously, though we do have names which were later attached to the Gospels in the second century. One might dismiss such attribution as dubious attempts to artificially empower these writings, though appropriately assigned authorship is certainly far from impossible, even if the attributed author served more as a source or editor for the manuscript. The author of the first gospel, first as it is ordered in the Christian New Testament, is Matthew, Matityahu, also called Levi. Matityahu was apparently a member of the despised, albeit probably quite wealthy, collection of Jewish tax collectors before becoming a disciple of Yeshua. Early sources report that he wrote the gospel in Hebrew, perhaps in Antiochia in Syria, before later being translated into Greek. The writer of the ordinal second gospel, though the one usually assumed to have been composed first, is Mark, or Marcos. He ostensibly traveled alongside Kepha, the Apostle Peter in English, acting as his translator, and eventually organizing Kepha's stories of Yeshua into a gospel in Alexandria, in Egyptus. Luke, or Lucas, the author of the third gospel and its sequel, the Acts of the Apostles, was a traveling companion of Paul. His writings compose a quarter of the New Testament, more than the letters of Paul. Finally, John, Yohanan, one of the 12, like Matityahu, is supposed to have written the final gospel on the western shores or islands of Asia Minor, perhaps on the island of Patmos, where his direct influence endured to the late 2nd century, at least. None of the Gospels explicitly refers to eyewitness testimony, no I or we, except perhaps John. So in spite of the early attributions, the documents themselves are considered anonymous. They were all written in Koine Greek, with the possible exception of Matthew, with different perspectives and different goals in the biography they were narrating. Nevertheless, they all begin by recounting Yeshua's teachings and miracles before climaxing in the Passion narrative, providing detailed accounts of Yeshua's final days and hours prior to his crucifixion, and conclude with Yeshua's resurrection from the dead. John stands out uniquely from the other three, which are described as synoptics, sharing a similar canter as they follow Yeshua through his itinerancy. Their similarity not just in their stories, but also in particular choices of words, leads the reader to assume that they either relied on the same source material or borrowed heavily from each other, or, more likely, a little bit of both. The most recent reconstruction proposes that Mark was written first. Matthew and Luke relied on Mark, but both of these texts share other passages almost verbatim. So another shared source was proposed, which is called Quelle, a German word for source or origin, or just Q for short. Regardless of their order and interdependencies, it is clear that the synoptics behave similarly, trying to present a coherent and somewhat chronological narrative, which allow the reader to follow Yeshua as he crisscrosses Galilee and Judea, enjoying the shorter, pithier sayings, a veritable highlight reel. John, in contrast, has selected a smaller number of stories, with very little overlap with the synoptics, which he has related in greater detail. John's narrative is built around 7 signs or miracles, compared to some 20 in Matthew, and he prefers complex and revealing monologues to the pithier sayings of the synoptics. For example, he devotes 21 verses to a nighttime chat between Yeshua and a Pharisee, and 42 to his conversation with a Samaritan woman at a well, stories which may have received at most 10 in the other synoptics. John also shows more interest in symbolism, for example, telling Nicodemus that he must be born again, leaving him somewhat befuddled how to slip back into his mother's womb, as well as Yeshua's own identity and vocation. Perhaps the best-known example of his identity being his statement that he and God, his Father, are one, a blasphemous statement declaring himself God, which was immediately recognized by those gathered around. These latter features fit John into having a high Christology, meaning a strong emphasis on Yeshua's divinity, whereas the synoptics bear a low Christology, providing mostly distant echoes of Yeshua's divinity and more strongly emphasizing his vocation as a prophet to the Jews. John is therefore assumed to have been written much later, having a more advanced or evolved notion of Yeshua's role. This fits a general assumption in his studies on early Christianity that supposed that Yeshua was initially regarded as no more than a human prophet and a great moral teacher. But as the first century came to an end, Yeshua became increasingly associated with being divine, much as the flight of a comet proved the divinity of Julius Caesar shortly after his death. And so the Gospel of John must have been written later. John does, however, have a number of features which would suggest an earlier date. Also, there isn't that much evidence for the framework of Yeshua becoming increasingly realized as divine, as even Paul, writing a decade after Yeshua's death, reflects a high Christology. The Gospels are not the earliest surviving manuscripts about Yeshua, but rather Paul's letters provide the first surviving accounts. They do not explicitly mention Yeshua's sayings, parables, or miracles, which is somewhat surprising. Maybe Paul didn't know all that much, having neither known Yeshua nor spent time with him. Or perhaps the focus of the Nazarene community was less interested in what Yeshua taught and did, and more interested in how they should organize and live their lives, given their commitment to Yeshua. This possibility fits well with how Christians are instructed today. The sermon and liturgy is more likely to find its inspiration in the Pauline letters, because, just like in the communities Paul wrote to, Christians want to know how to practically make sense of their Christianity. Further, both Paul and the modern Christian continually reference the death and resurrection of Yeshua as the reason for their new way of life, centered around the Eucharist. Returning to our discussion of the Gospels, we can sketch a brief outline of Yeshua as represented in these accounts. Apart from Mark, they begin with an origin narrative, foreshadowing Yeshua's important role. After being baptized by Yohanan the Baptizer, Yeshua begins his teachings and miracles. These are not usually described in the same order. This shouldn't trouble our reconstruction. The authors were less interested in retaining chronological veracity, as in organizing the events in order to highlight a particular point, much as our two biographers of Churchill might freely organize their material by topic to better present their argument. Yeshua's teachings center on an arriving reign of God for which the Jewish people must change their ways, living righteously. He spoke to and for Jews, for his message only made sense within a Jewish context. Finally, the crux of all the Gospels is the Passion narrative, in which, following a Pesach, Passover meal, with his intimates, he is arrested, tried, and executed as a criminal by the Roman authorities. But shortly thereafter, Yeshua is resurrected, and the Nazarene movement begins. We cannot quite end our discussion of the Gospels here, as there are two other topics which require the tersest of discussion due to their interdependence. First, the quest for the historical Yeshua, or the quest for the historical Jesus. Second, what about all those other Gospels? Even when one assumes the complete reliability of the Gospel accounts, the reader must make remarkable effort in giving life and chronology to the historical figure of Yeshua. Who was he? What did he think about? What were his goals? Burying oneself in the abridged descriptions of Yeshua in his Jewish context does eventually shed some light into intentions and person. The task is thoroughly exacerbated, however, when one assumes that the accounts are less than historically accurate, such that the historian must additionally sort truth from fiction. The hypothesis, first of all, assumes that the writers, whoever they were, are willing to bend the truth to fit their needs, goals, and preconceived notions, probably for religious reasons. For example, the various gospel writers differ substantially in the details of their passion narratives, so one might presume that they sewed them together into a coherent narrative, perhaps relying on rumor and guesswork. Second, some historians suggest that with the Gospels being put together over 40 years after the events in question, the oral story had become unreliable, allowing the size of the fish to grow out of proportions and into the annals of legend and myth. And yet, the significance of Yeshua would certainly have left their mark on his disciples. Would you question the reliability of personal reminiscences of people who had worked closely with Churchill, such as his mannerisms, habits, or anecdotes, that were brought out 40 to 50 years after the event? I think I would. Third, there is also a prevalent view which prefers the short sayings to the extended story. This assumption helps explain the popularity of placing Mark first chronologically. The Gospel often presents an abbreviated form of what is found in Matthew or Luke. Would you better remember a pithy aphorism or a story? If the story, this would explain why so many of Yeshua's parables survive. It may be worth noting that most of the aforementioned Churchill reminiscences are anecdotes rather than things he would say. While the goal of these endeavors to reconstruct the best, most reliable picture of the human Yeshua, even if we can't really rely on our sources, is certainly a worthy task. But we must remember the constraints placed on us by the ancient world. Reconstruction is difficult and tenuous. Otherwise, we'd have figured this out centuries ago. Regardless, it is always an interesting question, and has been for the last two millennia. Given a predefined set of conditions, what sort of Yeshua do we end up with? Finally, we should not conclude a short introduction to the Gospels without an honorable mention to some of their descendants. Mostly those date to the 2nd century, if not later, with a few perhaps creeping into the 1st. These are typically broken down by subject matter. Most of the earlier texts are biographical Gospels, much akin to the 4. The Gospel to the Nazarenes appears to be an Aramaic version of the Gospel of Matthew, without the infancy narratives, whereas that to the Ebionites is perhaps a combination of the synoptics. Marcion's Gospel is usually described as a hacked-up Gospel of Luke, having removed Jewish references. In contrast, the so-called sayings Gospels have almost no narrative, containing merely the sayings and parables, usually shortened, of Yeshua. The best known from this category is probably the Gospel of Thomas, which noticeably omits the death and resurrection narratives. Some of the most interesting are the infancy Gospels, which attempt to fill in the life of Yeshua prior to his baptism. The infancy Gospel of Thomas, different from the Gospel of Thomas mentioned in the sayings Gospels, presents a mischievous, miracle-working teenager who eventually learns to use his powers for good. Finally, the Passion Gospels only describe the events surrounding Yeshua's death, although it is possible that they may have contained more. These include the Gospel of Peter, the Coptic Apocalypse of Peter, and the Gospel of Judas Iscariot. The Gospels, canonical and otherwise, have been central to the Christian story since its inception, capturing its origin story, and for historians, it provides a tantalizing glimpse at the fascinating figure at the heart of Christianity, as well as the reflections of the anonymous authors. We will next consider the perspectives and purposes present in the Gospel writers themselves, in an attempt to understand their goals, and perhaps sneak a peek into the world around them.